Blog Talk Radio.
Get a new opinion, get a little work done, and forget it. Maybe it's the peace.
Woke up, I'm like, what is going on?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Mary and Melissa Show. This is one of the wonderful projects of the Inclusion Zone, which is a 501c3 that is run by two moms. I'm one of them. And we both have kids who have disabilities, special needs, choose the word, phrasing that you prefer. We live in the nation's capital, and we are so fortunate because we have access to so many different wonderful experts in the field of disability, special education, and today we're going to be joined by two folks who are frequent contributors to our show, and they're both from a terrific organization that is called the National Association of School Psychologists. One is Dr. Eric Rocklin, who is the Director of Professional Development and Standards, and we also have Dr. Kelly Valancourt-Strobeck, who is the Director of Government Relations. And today's topic is testing accountability for our students with disabilities. I definitely want to talk about the PARC testing, what comes out of the Common Core, because that's the hot topic. And I just want to welcome Dr. Rostin and Dr. Valancourt. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Oh, so thanks for joining us today to talk about this very hot topic of testing. I know I hate the idea of even thinking about testing, remembering it as a kid myself, just sitting there filling in all those bubbles. Now kids are sitting around clicking on a variety of different answers. And while you all are at the National Association of School Psychologists, you might ask, well, what do you guys have to do with testing? But it actually turns out that you're quite involved in tracking all the changes in testing and the accountability standards for students with disabilities. And one of the things that I've had to learn as a parent is that there are different accountability standards for our students as opposed to non-disabled students. There in the past have been a variety of different accommodations, alternate testing, but a lot of this is now being re-looked at with the Common Core and the PARC testing. So let's just start, if we could, maybe if Dr. Rossin or Dr. Valancourt, if you, one of you, please just give us an update on where are we as a nation with doing testing on our, and I mean testing, not aptitude or intelligence testing, but how our kids are faring vis-a-vis other students.
So this is Kelly. So I think the conversation around, I'll call it assessment, because I think testing, and I think there's just a lot of negative connotations around testing. Some are obviously valid, but when we're looking at assessments, the conversation is still ongoing about, you know, what is the best way to assess our kids in schools, to one, make sure, you know, we want to hold schools accountable for making sure that all students are making progress. But we want to make sure we're using the most appropriate methods of assessment and that we're using them in the right way. And so in the most general sense of what's going on is I think we're seeing a big shift, hopefully, in whereas right now, you know, there's an over-reliance on standardized testing. So, you know, the end-of-grade tests, and, you know, in many states it's now a PARC or a Smarter Balance Consortium, depending on, you know, which group your state joined with to create standardized tests based on Common Core. But those were largely considered the only metric of success. You know, they were used in how we evaluate teachers and how we evaluate schools. And I think there's been a big shift in thinking that it's probably not the best way, you know, we shouldn't just be using that one metric, and a standardized test isn't not the, you know, it's not the gold star on how we should look at student learning. You know, I think there'll be a lot of changes, I think, over the next couple of months as Congress looks at, you know, what they're going to do with No Child Left Behind. But I do think, in general, people are starting to recognize that this over-reliance on standardized testing is not good. It's not the way these tests should be used, and it's not good for our kids.
Interesting. Well, yeah, I mean, that seems to have been quite a bit of a reaction. I mean, you heard a lot about parents wanting to opt out of testing. You hear about teachers saying, God, all I have to do now is, it's all just about preparing for the test. There's, you know, no other type of learning that goes on. So it definitely has hit the mainstream of the discussion about whether this is the way that our nation should be going. But just let's dial this back for a moment. I there was something that I found a little bit difficult to understand. Do all students with disabilities have to participate in whatever is the assessment? Say you're from the state of Maryland or Colorado, D.C., wherever. You're a student who has whatever disability. Are you going to be given the same assessment as all the other kids who are in general education?
So, yes and no. So, for students that have the most significant cognitive disabilities, they are often assessed on alternative academic standards. And that's, you know, that's a decision that's approved by the parents. You know, it's about 1% of kids. We're talking with, you know, about children with significant intellectual disabilities. For the rest of the population, student population, they are, so at least 95% of kids are expected to, you know, be a part of that assessment system. For kids with certain disabilities, you can have accommodations. So, for example, you could have a test read to you. If that's, you know, if it's not a test measuring reading, you know, there's those kinds of accommodations. If a kid has, you know, some motor difficulties, they can have a scribe. So they're not having to write down, you know, they're not the ones filling in the bubble. They're not writing, you know, because that's difficult for them. They're picking out the answer, and someone else is doing that work for them. So there are, you can have extra time, you know, particularly for kids who, you know, they just need a little bit more time to process information. And I know I'm not as well versed on how, you know, some of the standardized testing is being implemented right now in terms of technology, but I know there's been a lot of work to kind of use adaptive methods and using technology so that the test better responds to the student, and so that there's adjustments you can make in how the test is delivered, particularly if it's on a computer or an iPad, to better match the particular needs of the student who's taking that test, so that we're actually measuring what it is they know, not how well they can take that particular test.
Well, I want to ask you, Dr. Rawson, about your role, your title, job title, Director of Professional Development and Standards, would sort of lead me to think that your organization has played a role in maybe helping teachers prepare to administer these tests, recognizing that test assessments can be anxiety-inducing, perhaps for the teachers themselves, as well as for the students. I was wondering if there's something that you might be able to share about the rollout of the PARC assessments and how schools were prepared for the vicissitudes of a new assessment for everyone.
Well, we haven't played a major role as far as how teachers should be preparing students for those exams. I think our role has been more so focused on what is quality assessment and how should it be used. So I'm going to go back to something that Kelly mentioned a little earlier, on talking about standardized assessments and the kind of negative connotations it has, and this will kind of lead into your question a little more directly, but a standardized assessment only means that it's given in the same way to everyone. That's what standardized means. It means that the directions are delivered in the same way, the test is given in the same order, and so it's presumably equitable for everyone that's receiving it, versus someone who's kind of given the instructions a little different way, that we can't say different results are due to that. That's all it means. The negative connotations are a result of how they're being used, the high stakes component of it, which means we're getting one measurement point and we are making very important educational decisions, either they're employment decisions or placement decisions or educational program decisions or decisions on kind of overall school reform.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we support. However, we do support the use of assessment. And standardized assessments can be very good and very helpful information, including for kids with disabilities. It's basically an opportunity to measure something, and a lot of the standardized assessments that are used at least have gone through some rigorous process to be sure that they're valid, that they're giving us information that can be helpful. What's missing is utilizing folks like school psychologists who can look at the data and actually use it for good purposes and not for saying, well, this principal should be fired or this teacher should not get a raise or be demoted or this kid should be moved back.
Right.
So that's where we stand on that. As far as the PARC test, we're not all that familiar with that, with the specifics of that test and how high quality it is, quite frankly.
I've looked at some of the questions, but, I can't speak to the quality of the PARC test, but I know that, and I think this is probably true for all of the tests that are associated with Common Core, not just PARC, with the Smarter Balance test, is that I think the way that they were rolled out, and I think the rollout was poor.
Yeah.
And the fact that I don't, and again, I can't speak for every district in every state. This is just a blanket statement, and that teachers really weren't given enough time to figure out what the curriculum, what Common Core really was, how is that changing their teaching practices, what standards they were teaching, and how, because if they're not really understanding the curriculum, how can they then align their curriculum to a standardized test? And it's, in some cases, it was very unfair for those tests to be used after that first year to then make these high-stakes decisions for teachers and for students. And so I can't speak to the quality of the test, of PARC or Smarter Balance, but I think there is general consensus, looking back, that it was rolled out way too fast and that it should, there should have been a lot more time, there should have been a lot more education to our teachers and to our parents and to our, families about what Common Core was and what these, what these tests are actually measuring. And I think a lot of people recognize that those were poor decisions that I think people would do over if they could.
Well, that's interesting. But when we talk about the desire to boost high school graduation rates for students with disabilities, we want to boost the college and career readiness of our community, because that's where we're slipping and continuously. So what is it that you think is needed? I mean, there's obviously a number of things that are needed in the educational system, but your comment about your interest is obviously in the use of quality assessments and how they should be used. So let's talk about how are we teasing out quality assessments for our students, with all of our students, but particularly those with disabilities who are most at risk for dropout and graduating to the couch.
Well, again, the many of the tests that are used have gone through kind of a very rigorous process to make sure that all the items and the overall test is somewhat valid, meaning that it's measuring what we intend to measure, whether it's measuring, do you have a certain level of knowledge based on what's expected in the curriculum? Now, the problem is it shouldn't necessarily be used as a decision-making tool in a punitive way, a good way for it to be used is early on as a screener. And it can help identify whether students are requiring any kind of intervention. It should also not be used as a single measure and the only piece of data that's used. So we look at we might do these tests in like third grade or sixth grade. We identify students that maybe are not doing as well on that test. And so we look at some of the other data. We work with the teachers. We look at whether there's any kind of behavioral problems. We talk with the parents. And then we use that information to help target some kind of interventions. One of the best methods to prevent dropout is to not wait till they're in high school. And so a lot of these early assessment measures can be used in a very good way. The whole pep rally thing and all this kind of craziness about this end of year test and that it's, you know, my job depends on you doing well, that would be like a teacher, what they say to a kid. That's not a good way to think about it.
Mm-mm.
It's more so how we educate, you know, how you do on this test will help guide how we educate you and the services that we provide.
And but then I think to go off what he just said, where we can really improve is, one, changing the way we use these tests. So doing exactly what Eric said and say, you know, at the beginning of the year, these are screeners to help us identify which kids need additional support. And then the schools need to make sure that they have that additional support and that they're delivering it and they're monitoring progress and making sure that, you know, that the interventions are working. Because we could take, you know, schools can collect the best data in the world, but if they don't do anything with it and they don't then apply that in a way where they're delivering appropriate either academic or behavioral support to kids, then it's meaningful. But I think that's kind of...
Yeah, and if we were using these assessments appropriately, then actually not including students with disabilities would be, in my view, discriminatory and a disservice to those students, because they should have access to that measurement and the ability of the educators to use that information to identify the services they need.
Let's talk about, I went right to, let's just talk about PARC testing, but that's not the only kind of assessment that's used in schools. All are talking about the good use of assessments, what are you talking about? What assessments?
So a lot of schools have moved towards implementing what's called a multi-tiered system of support. It used to be called, it's been referred to as RTI or PBIS, where it's just a tiered set of interventions. And so what some schools do is exactly what Eric said. There are a lot of standardized assessments that were developed as screeners, you know, to kind of identify, you know, at the beginning of the first grade, here's kind of where we think kids should be in terms of skills in the first grade. And so they deliver it to every student in the school, and the purpose of that is to see which kids have come into the first grade with the skills that they need to continue to be successful, and then identify some of those kids that, you know, maybe they lost a little bit more over the summer, or maybe they weren't as far along in kindergarten at the end of the year as some other kids, but it's there just to identify some kids that need additional support and make sure that they get that. The same as, you know, it's the same way that teachers often use either standardized or non-standardized assessments at various points throughout the year, because they want to make sure that before they move on to Unit 4, the kids in their class, you know, have mastered what's in Unit 3. And so, you know, teachers are developing these things themselves all the time to inform their day-to-day instruction with the kids in their classroom.
Right. But every state has a large standardized test of academic skills. And so there's a lot of different assessments that are going on in different states.
Right. So is it your general view, opinion, that assessments, standardized tests, are not being used well to help inform the education and interventions of students with disabilities? Is that what we're saying here?
I wouldn't say all standardized tests, but I think, you know, when people hear standardized tests, they think of that end-of-year assessment, and that is not being used appropriately.
Yes.
I mean, for one, teachers don't get the data back until the middle of the summer, so it's completely not helpful for them, you know, to see how their students performed in July.
Right. People basically use the terms standardized test and high-stakes testing interchangeably, and that shouldn't be the case. Standardized assessment's good. High-stakes testing, not so
bad.
So what should a parent be thinking about, talking to their teachers about? How does this sort of change or enhance the IEP process even? Let's just, you know, brass tacks, you know, what does this look like?
Well, ideally, the standardized assessment is just another data point.
Mm-hmm.
Just like we would never go into an IEP and say, I gave this one rating scale or I did one observation in the classroom and I am identifying a student with having an autism spectrum disorder. Similarly, we would never use a single data point like a standardized assessment test to make an educational decision. What we're doing is we're looking for trends and patterns and as much information about a kid as we can. And the standardized assessment provides a very good piece of information. Then we say, let's look at that along with everything else that we know. If we have a kid who's in eighth grade and they've been receiving special education services for 4 years, we say, have there been trends? Have there been improvements? Or have things gotten worse on these assessments? And if so, why? Is this matching what we're seeing in the classroom? And it should not be, well, this teacher should be fired. It should say, What are we doing wrong, or what can we do better? What interventions do we know about that are effective for kids that, you know, with this disability that learn this way? So that's ideally how it should be used. It's just another piece of information. It's another piece of data.
Right.
And
right.
I think, you know, schools have a responsibility to be very transparent about the types of assessments and testing that they're using, and so, you know, for all parents, I think, you know, one of the easiest things they can do is just have a conversation with the teacher or the principal at the beginning of the year to get an idea of what types, you know, how often and what types of tests are going to be given throughout the school year and how they're going to be used. You know, schools, I think, they probably put it on their website, but parents often don't know where to find it or don't know what that means. But just having an open conversation with the teacher and the principal can be hugely informative and can often, you know, put to rest some anxiety with the kids and the parents about the test and how they're used.
You know, that's really an interesting point. You know, I had never thought really about looking at some of these tests and approaching a new school year with that as a data point, not the only data point, but a data point to say, golly, you know, we're only here, we want to be there. We did this last year, what could we do differently? Because we do want to move forward. So that's a very interesting thing that should be on the to-do list of parents. I mean, that's a very, not simple, nothing is simple, but it's clearly something that needs to be put in our toolbox. You know, sometimes just getting your IEP progress reports really doesn't, they're not always as descriptive as they can be. So,
sure.
So
right.
This is
absolutely.
Excellent point. Well taken.
And I would add one thing that, you know, it's an opportunity to see if there's a mismatch between the information
mm-hmm.
you're receiving in those progress reports or on report cards and that assessment. So, oh, they're making great progress, A's and B's, yet they tanked that assessment.
Right.
Okay. Let's figure out why.
Why? Yeah.
And let's talk to the teacher. What assessments are you giving in the classroom?
Are they appropriate?
Are they matching? Was it just a bad day, or are the grades not really based on what they should be learning?
Mm-hmm.
So it's an opportunity. It can be an opportunity to start a discussion.
Sure.
But how it's used a lot of times now, it's like kind of tucked in a drawer, and it's just.
Right.
They're lumped in. It's an evaluation of the school, not of the kids.
Right. And if a student doesn't make a certain cut score, then they're automatically put into this other set of classes, which is completely inappropriate because it ignores everything else that child did
yeah.
in the classroom.
Hmm. Yeah, it's really a great point because I'm you know, as parents, you know, we think down the road for our kids. You know, some kids who may have an opportunity to attend college will have to take SATs, you know, and you don't want to suddenly be on the losing end of that at in, you know, 11th, 12th grade. So this is very helpful. Are you able to talk about the accommodations? Just a touching point on the accommodations that are allowed in assessments, because I think that's, you know, of course there's the assessments a teacher might make up in the classroom, and that's fine, and that would follow from the IEP. But is there anything that's different with, say, the PARC testing or any of these other quote unquote high stakes testing that is different in terms of accommodations?
I'm looking that up right now because I don't want to misspeak, because I know so NASS was involved. There's a coalition called the Consortium for Citizens with Disabilities, and there's an education task force with that, and we were involved a long time ago with providing recommendations on what appropriate accommodations with this new test would be. And I'm honestly right now pulling up their website because I want to make sure that I don't tell you something that's incorrect.
Absolutely. And I don't want to put you on the spot there, but so if you want to just wrap that into just if you can give us the state of the state on the reauthorization of the ESEA, what is that? Elementary Education. Please help. That's such a long one.
Elementary and Secondary Education Act.
Yeah. There we go. Elementary and Secondary Education Act. And for all of you folks out there, that's the bill that's how we get our kids educated. And for us parents,
well, that's the No Child Left Behind Act.
Okay, there we go. So it's being looked at. What do we need to know? What to be fearful of?
So,
what to celebrate? What's the deal?
So the House passed their version. I guess probably since the last time we've talked, there has been a lot that has gone on. So the House passed their version, and then the Senate, I guess maybe last week, maybe the week before, passed out of the House their version of a No Child Left Behind override, and so now they're in what's called a conference. So you have the Senate bill and you have the House bill, and they have to, there's discrepancies. There's some places where there's not agreement, and so they have to address those disagreements before we can move forward.
Sure.
So it's a little bit unclear where things will end up, but based on where things are right now, you know, knowing that they could change, one thing that we are going to see, at least in terms of accountability and the federal law, is that this over-reliance on standardized tests and adequate yearly progress based on one test score will be gone. So accountability systems will be comprised of multiple data points, which, you know, to Eric and I, we were like, that's common sense.
Yeah.
That's what it should be. So it can include things like student growth. It can include measures of school quality, such as student engagement or family engagement or school climate. It can be formative assessments. It can be summative assessments. It's pretty much whatever the state thinks is appropriate, as long as it is multiple measures. And then for students and for individual groups of students, so for kids with disabilities, no longer are we saying that every kid has to get a certain score on a test. It's let's set goals, you know, appropriate yet challenging goals for all students, and then the school and the state have to demonstrate that they're making significant progress towards meeting those goals. So, for example, for an average student, you know, a reasonable goal might be, well, they started the fourth grade on a fourth grade level, so we want them to start the fifth grade on a fifth grade level. For students with, you know, some types of learning disabilities who might be, you know, a grade year or two behind. So let's say they start fourth grade with the reading skills of like a beginning third grader. We would want them to make a year's worth of growth. So we're not expecting them to hit, you know, we're no longer making these arbitrary cut scores. It's really taking a more holistic look at how students demonstrate what it is they know. and measuring it in a more appropriate way.
That sounds like the way to go.
And it has, I mean, a lot of people, you know, I think parents especially have been a very, very large voice in saying, you know, the use of these standardized tests in the way that they have been used is inappropriate, and we need to be looking at more than, you know, there's a lot more that goes into student learning and school success, and that's reflected so far in some of the stuff that's been proposed.
But and to be a broken record here, you know, we're cautioning against being vocal advocates against assessment altogether.
Right. Because assessment just means data. You know, you're just getting really, and we need data to know how our students are doing.
Yeah, I want to know how my kids are. I want as much information about my kids as possible. I just don't want someone to, you know, say you either move on or you go back to go and don't collect 200 based on this one test.
Well, that's absolutely the case, and you know, as we parents, we're very used to having our kids assessed. I mean, from when you first think that there might be something up with your child, I mean, you go through a battery of different assessments, but goodness, it really is not just one person who comes to the conclusion that your child has a learning disability or ADHD or what whatever it may be. I mean, it's a team approach, and they're and sometimes those categories change as well. So I don't see why that wouldn't be the case in the school environment as well. It just makes common sense as well. I think we parents have to be very supportive of the idea of assessments, because that's what gives us the information about how to address the needs of our kids and how to help make sure that they can move forward. And, you know, something that when we were in touch about this show, we talked about holding children to high expectations. And that's, you know, there's something that I've heard in the past about students with disabilities and sort of the idea of the tyranny of low expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the last thing that we want. It's very easy to not expect for a student to do well on any number of assessments, but that's not how we should be thinking, because they do go to school every day. They do have multiple individuals who intervene educationally, and so I really appreciate that point, that these assessments need to be used as well by the variety of professionals who are involved in order to boost the expectations. I mean, otherwise it's literally just an academic experience to take this test or assessment and just put it in a folder.
Right.
So it sounds like, you know, that's exactly the philosophy behind your position.
Yeah. Well, if you remove some of the kind of high stakes and the punitive stakes associated with the assessment, you'll probably likely see a lot of, or you'll see a reduction in the anxiety associated with it.
It's not going to be as big of a deal.
There's a lot of anxiety on the educators' part, because they are receiving a lot of punitive action as a result of some of their kids not doing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, obviously, they're going to, you know, that's where a lot of these, you know, the pep rallies and the drilling and the, you know, the kind of high-pressured statements that are imposed on kids and kind of talking about the test ad nauseum to the point where it's becomes something to fear, that would likely go away.
And what we've seen,
yeah,
too, and what we hope will go away is, you know, and this is particularly relevant for students with disabilities, but also for, you know, academically gifted kids, because there's so much rides on the score of that one test, what we tend to see is teachers I don't even think they're conscious of it, but the kids, they're referred to as bubble kids. So those kids that are like, oh, just a little bit more support, they might be able to pass the test. All, like, so much focus is given to them at the expense of, you know, your academically gifted kids who you know are going to pass this test. and your kids who, they're not going to pass a test, but that doesn't mean they don't deserve and need academic support to make progress throughout the year. So hopefully what we'll see is, you know, teachers will be differentiating their instruction for all students towards standards, not just focused on who in my classroom is going to be able to pass this test.
Oh, God, I hope so. I hope we haven't made too much of a cultural change to embrace this wild west of high-stakes testing that teachers can and schools can go, I don't know if they're going back to this or sort of readjusting themselves to this other kind of approach. I would love to know that with the ESEA being reauthorized, that additional monies would come to help, especially kids with disabilities and having multimodal ways to show their intelligences.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
obviously a great divide in the digital divide for kids with disabilities, kids from different socioeconomic strata. But I guess we got to, when they come out of conference, perhaps we should have a conversation about that as well. So, well, this is really incredibly informative. And, you know, this is going to be, for me, this was a big wake-up conversation and one that we're now going to be able to promote through our show and through our literature about the idea of parents using the testing as not just something that gets put into the folder, but as something that is an actionable data point that they need to use as well as everything else. I think that also means that parents need to be educated on these assessments and how to articulate what their kids need. But this is the first
mm-hmm.
step. So I really appreciate these thoughts and, as always, your contribution to our show and to the movement overall.
Great. Well,
great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. So thank you all. So we have just concluded a terrific conversation once again with Dr. Eric Rossin and Dr. Kelly Valancourt-Strobeck, who are both from the National Association of School Psychologists. They do quite a lot of work on the issue of special needs, students with disabilities, and this topic of high-stakes testing is one that we really need to make sure that we parents stay on top of, make sure we follow the testing that our kids are going to be taking part of, and make sure that when we get the results, that we actually use them, look at them, talk about them, make changes to the IEP about them. It's because you want to see your kids continue to improve and do better and reach the potential that they truly have. So thank you, everyone, once again, for listening to our radio show, The Mary and Melissa Show, a project of the Inclusion Zone. You can find us at www.inclusionzone.org. And we want to thank our sponsors, the Kiwanis Club of Bethesda, terrific group, to run the Miracle League. That's run out of Gaithersburg, Maryland. You got to get out there, check them out, check out Miracle League on the web search, and you'll find them. All right, everyone, thanks so much.
Well, better than the first time.